What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Google gains, the tech giant closing back in on a $2 trillion market cap as shares hit another all-time high. How Alphabet got its AI ambitions back on track and how the cloud is powering those gains. Plus, charged up utility companies push rushing to upgrade U.S. electricity grids, and that is driving power prices higher for you. What could that mean for inflation as the Fed ponders its rate cut path? And later, Boeing's backslide as a plane maker faces another whistleblower claim. Cisco surges on a bullish call from Morgan Stanley. And banks get ready to kick off Q1 earnings season. How the rate backdrop will impact their business. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq on the desk tonight. Julie Beal in person. Hey. Karen Feinerman, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. Stocks trying to stage a late-day rally as investors wait for tomorrow's key inflation report. The Nasdaq and the S&P managing to climb into the green. While the Dow is slightly lower ahead of CPI, economists expect consumer prices rose 0.3% in March versus February. Compared to last year, they're expecting a slight acceleration to 3.7%. We will get to all of that in just a minute. But we start with a fresh all-time high for Google, the tech giant unveiling a new chip to compete with Microsoft and Amazon at its cloud event next conference in Las Vegas today. So what does this mean for Google and the race for cloud supremacy? At least for today, that meant another 1% gain and a new high.
Got well, it. Maybe they're not losing as badly as we thought a couple months ago when the stock was cascading lower. But, you know, I think it's partially that. I think mostly, this is just my opinion, NVIDIA's weakness is Google's gain. I believe that 100%. And if rates continue to go higher, which I also believe, I think those high-flying, high-valuation names will continue to sell off, and I think people will rotate into Google like they're doing right now. They report, I believe, on the 23rd of this month. We've said it for a while. I think you stay with this name into earnings. I mean, this is the one out of many of them that you can make a rational case for in terms of valuation.
A very rational case in terms of valuation. I think it's actually 25th this month, but it's not like they were all of a sudden in the AI game. Right. They just did such a terrible launch. I mean, you know, we talked about that ad nauseum, which was ad nauseum the moment it came out. But it should be much higher, actually, I think. It's been at this PE 23. If you back out the cash, it's 22, 21. It should be at a much higher premium to the market when you consider what an extraordinary company this is. And I think also, not only was the launch not handled well, but I also think the fears of what would happen to the search business, which obviously is the engine of earnings here, have not come to pass as yet. They could, but so this is sort of the sweet spot of the beginning of their launch. I think we could see a lot more upside if Gemini really takes off and gets anything like a co-pilot-y kind of, you know, excitement around it. I think there's good upside here.
Yeah, I agree. I think the company is so well positioned because not only do they have the ability to create these chips, and we know that there's just this race to be able to replace NVIDIA with FPGA and ASIC chips, but they have the data to train on, right? It's not just what's on search, it's in our emails, it's in our calendars, and they need that data in order for the large language models to be any good. So I think they're really well positioned, and with the stock where it's at, it really looks pretty compelling to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, this is not the reason why I would say that Google should be up because of, you know, the generative AI story changing. What they need to do is really on this Gemini product, they need to actually have some successful launches. They need to demonstrate that their product is as good as what OpenAI is offering and some of these other upstarts, right? And so I don't think this chip does that. So I just think it's kind of interesting as like an extension of the conversation we were having last night in a way. It's like when you have NVIDIA coming off, you have some of these other stories kind of, you know, just kind of grinding a little bit, going sideways a little bit. I mean, people are looking for opportunities on things that are unloved. We talked about low expectations and really poor sentiment last night. I think that's what's going on here, but I don't think you're buying Alphabet right now because of their ability to better compete with NVIDIA, you know, in generative AI, like, you know, high-end GPUs or anything like that. as soon as they come out with a product that people want to use and they can charge, you know, $20 a month for, or, you know, additional or something like that, then put it out across their productivity suites and the like, that's when people are going to start recognizing, like, the relative cheapness, in my opinion. So I don't mean to, like, throw cold water on it. Last night, we all sound really, like, optimistic about it, especially as the trade or the idea is broadening out. But, like, for their chips, I don't think that's the reason why it should be going up right now. I don't know.
But to the point that the chip business will help the cloud business.
Do you think this software company is going to do better at designing, like, high-end GPUs than they will doing software, you know what I mean, that is going to, like, better enable search and defend their moat? Like, that's my only point. So I'm just trying to, like, you know, kind of push back at a narrative here. I think a lot of people want to be bullish on this name right now, but I don't think this is probably the best reason to do it.
Well, let's get to Deirdre Bosa. She just sat down with Google Cloud CEO Thomas Kurian, and in the last hour, she joins us now. Deirdre, some big announcements. What did Mr. Kurian say?
Yeah, so let me just hit on Dan's point right there, is that the chips are supposed to be part of this full ecosystem that is supposed to serve customers in the cloud. And that's really the proposition here. I also heard Karen say that Google's trying to create some co-pilot-y excitement. And I think that's right, because the problem with Google's generative AI has been mixed messaging. There was Bard, there was Duet AI, and now it's all under the Gemini umbrella. So they're streamlining it in the way that Microsoft has sort of streamlined its proposition into Copilot. Now, even though Google has developed the technology to make even ChatGPT and any of the other models possible, it has been seen as playing catch up in that race. So at its annual cloud event that's happening right now in Vegas, it's really a chance for Google and its executives to tell its cloud computing customers what sets it apart. So when I just sat down with Thomas Kurian, he is the Google cloud chief, I asked him that very question. What sets him apart from the hyperscale rivals? Have a listen.
One of them's offering a closed system. They have one model, one provider of that model. They don't even own that model. The other one does not have any AI expertise, so they only offer third-party models. We blend both. We have our own models, and we have the expertise to build systems and integrate these models into our products so that people can use it. At the same time, we're not taking a closed proprietary point of view.
Now, he did not name Microsoft and Amazon, but that is clearly who he is talking about. Microsoft, he's referring to with the closed system, and Amazon, he's referring to as the one without AI experience. And I got to say, guys, this is the most sort of aggressive or on the offense that I've seen Google executives in a long time. He wasn't mincing words here. And he's saying, look, we've got all aspects of this. We've got the model that we're developing ourselves, both an open and closed one in Gemini and Gemma. Plus, we have access to all the other ones that people want to use. And it's about that openness and choice, at least for the enterprise customers. Covered a lot more ground with Thomas Kurian, and we'll be showing that in Tech Check and The Exchange tomorrow.
It sounds also, Deirdre, like they're aware of other companies scraping data from their websites, and they're being a little bit more tough about it in terms of what those companies can get from their data.
Yeah, and that was part of the product announcements today, something called grounding. Google has such unique access to a database of information because it has been the gatekeeper to the internet. It has the most up-to-date. So that's one of the strengths that they're telling their cloud customers as well. And as we know, to build these models, you need a ton of data to do so. And everyone's competing right now on speed and accuracy.
And one last question, Debo. What has pricing been for cloud? We just heard that Alibaba cut its pricing 23% for international customers who use data centers that are housed outside of mainland China. Does that put pressure on these other hyperscalers?
So I did ask Thomas Kurian what monetization looks like, and he said that there's customers coming over from other cloud platforms to take advantage of their generative AI tools. He says this is new money being spent. He didn't talk about the exact pricing of it, but the idea that it's new income coming in, they're not just changing it and they're going to Google because they offer a unique set of these tools.
All right, Debo, thank you. Deirdre Bosa, back at Englewood Cliffs. So does anything change? I mean, you mentioned the chips. They're using NVIDIA H100 architecture, right? They're using ARM architecture. So it's not necessarily we're pulling the chip making business entirely.
No, and I think that's sort of the point Dan was making. Yeah. I don't think that's what's happening. I think what is happening, though, was it October of last year when they had that 11th hour meeting, that emergency meeting to talk about things, and the stock fell off a cliff? I mean, That was obviously a weak point. Now at least they're flexing a little bit. I think I heard that term. And Dan Ives talked about it today, I think, on Closing Bell. I mean, they're going to compete with people now, and I think they're taking this head on. Valuation has always been compelling. There's clearly still a moat there without question, and I definitely think if other names are going to show the weakness that we've seen now for the last 4 weeks, Google wins to that.
Yeah, and there's other ways they can win, right? So we're just talking about, okay, their generative AI models, that's one thing, right? But their cloud is really important, right? So when you think about, like, enterprise customers who want to use these services, they want to use them on these public clouds, you know, Google Cloud is number three behind AWS and then behind Microsoft. So all of this stuff is important. So I don't mean to, like, poo-poo that sort of thing, but, I mean, ultimately, there needs to be some sort of product that comes out that looks as exciting as GPT-4 or some of the other things that we've seen, and they have not been able to do that yet. I think when all those things start to come together, then you'll see an acceleration in their cloud numbers and the like, and you're going to see acceleration in cloud usage overall because of all this stuff. And we had just gotten to a period at one point last year where I think AWS's growth, like year over year, got down to like 11 or 12% or something. This was a business that was growing 40, 50% plus for years and years. And I think people were getting a little downbeat on all of these business models until generative AI came around.
Yeah, I think if you look at Google's business model, so much of it is really driven on being able to be a nice party to play with and not be completely dependent on AWS or be completely dependent on Microsoft. And if you think of their installed base of businesses that actually use their products, right, their Google Sheets and all of that, being able to insert just a little bit of AI is going to be really meaningful to their business, right? And it doesn't even have to be that great. Google Sheets are pretty terrible as a product, right? But a lot of businesses use them because they're functional and they work good enough. And I think having even good enough is going to be good enough for them to really be able to move the needle.
Yeah, and we made that case, though, for Apple, too, right? They have such a big installed base of people who use it. Siri is terrible.
We talked about
that many times. But still, people use it because it's on their phone already.
It is the most frustrating thing. I just asked Siri like 5 times instead of just looking it up myself because I just cannot believe how bad Siri is. I think they need to just scrap Siri entirely. It's amazing to me how such a product that cares so much about interface.
And yet you do use it. I hear you using it in the green room. But the point is that you use it because you're an installed base user.
I am.
And I hate it, and I think it's terrible, and I still will do it as well.
Yes, yes, yes. You know what's interesting to me about the Google multiple, which is so low? Microsoft and Amazon get a much higher cloud multiple, mm-hmm. right? I think that Meta gets a much higher advertising. Well, maybe not. And then YouTube, I think, gets a lower multiple. And then there's all the money that they spend on losing money. So somewhere in there, there should be a high multiple. We haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. All right. Let's turn now to the countdown to tomorrow's CPI report. The Dow clawing back from a 320-point deficit. Ahead of that release, ending the day virtually flat. The Nasdaq grabbing 52 points. Meantime, the 10-year Treasury yield retreating from four-month highs hit yesterday. So what are markets telling us about what they want to hear from tomorrow's report? Now, oftentimes, we like to play this game, Guy.
Yes.
If I told you what the report said today, what do you think the markets would do? Because it seems like the markets have a propensity to go higher when things show a hot economy and when things show that things are in line or in check, like inflation.
So my answer should typically be it's going to go higher, Mel. So a hot number to me, and I think what we saw at the end of the day, this is just me. What we saw at the end of the day, people squaring up ahead of tomorrow. What was the most interesting thing to me today was the fact that at one point the VIX was north of 16.5. Closed below 15. I mean, we haven't seen a move like that in the VIX in quite some time. Yields are interesting. I still think yields are going higher. But to answer your question, a hot number, when I say hot, I guess core is 3.8 is what the street's looking for. 3.8 or higher, and I think the market's not going to like it a lot. And I think you're going to see bonds continue to sell off. Gold continue to rally despite yields going higher. And the S&P sell off on the back of it.
Bank of America says a strong inflation print will send yields to 4.75%, which would be wow and probably not very good for equities.
Yeah, you would normally think that for equities that's going to be problematic. And, you know, if I think about it with my small cap hat, that's problematic for them, too, because they have more exposure to variable rate debt. But overall, I think a hot CPI print just puts cold water on the thesis that, you know, these market rate cuts are going to completely make it easy to be investing, right? We've been benefiting from low rates for such a long time. It's like being on a moving walkway at the airport, right? You think you're going so fast, but you have a lot of help. And so I think we could be losing that help soon.
Yeah. Karen?
I think anything sort of right up the fairway or a little cooler is good. Anything else, I think the market will sell off.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, that you mentioned small caps. I mean, small caps look a lot more constructive to me than the S&P 500. The S&P 500 really feels like it's losing some momentum. And at one point today, I looked up at my screens and I saw all the banks down like over 1%. I saw like American Express down more than 2%. And I was like, oh, I have not seen that sort of price action in a really long time. And NVIDIA was down more than 4%. I was like, oh, this has the makings to be finally like a proper sell-off. So I say to myself, last week, we had this run-up in yields into the all-important March jobs report. Isn't that what you call it? The all-important?
All-important. Every release is all-important.
And then the number comes out. It's hotter than expected. It gets explained away, and the yields go down. You know what I mean? Like, and then stocks went up. So I think about this one. I really do think, though, that if it is hot, I think yields are going to go up. I don't think they're going to go straight to 475, but I think the S&P is going to be testing that 50-day moving average at 5,100 or so.
All right. Well, ahead of this all-important CPI report, Wells Fargo Securities hiked its year-end price target for the S&P by 20% to a street high of 55.35. Chris Harvey is behind the call. He is the firm's head of equity strategy. Chris, always good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
You really sounded like you reluctantly did this. Like, you really didn't want to do this, but you had to do this.
You know, it's weird. This won't sound great, but even though we're high in the street, I don't feel bullish, right? It's not that, wow, multiples are so cheap, things are going to be fantastic, the economy's on fire, the Fed's cutting rates, and they're going to start slashing tomorrow. No, what it is people are looking further and further out. They're getting more and more aggressive with their discounting. We're going into that period of greed. The Fed's going to add too much accommodation, right? We're starting not, we can argue about two cuts or three cuts and when, but they're going to start a multi-year easing cycle, right? AI is still that secular story. And at the end of the day, I also think that M&A is going to start to kick up, right? And if we have a change in either the Senate or the House or the White House, regulation is going to change. So when I put it all together, I think prices are going higher, but I don't feel real bullish about it.
It sounded like, though, that if the three priced in rate cuts go away, that you become less bullish.
No, actually, no. So okay. I'm going to. Guy said something that I don't quite agree with. What we've been seeing is as rates go higher, that's actually good for the market because the status quo stays. Right. If the status quo stays, growth is good. That's good for growth. That's good for momentum, and it's good for large cap. If we start to see rates go lower, well, what works? Things that are out of favor, utilities, small caps, more levered companies. So in actuality, right, why did the equity market rally when we went from seven cuts to three cuts? Because the status quo stayed, right? If we start to lower rates, the Fed gets more aggressive, then you can start to see the rotation and large caps, to Dan's point, large caps start to go sideways, not up.
Totally get that. Here's the pushback. What is then gold telling you in an environment where it should be getting whacked with yields going higher and the dollar going higher? Gold's making all-time highs seemingly every day.
Now that's a great point. This is something that we struggle with because I see two trades in the market. I see that momentum trade and I'm seeing a reinflation trade. But both of those trades are helped by higher rates or rates not going lower, right? And so I don't quite know what's happening with gold, but we are seeing it's gold, it's silver, it's copper, it's energy, all going higher. There's a bit of a reinflation trade as rates have been going higher. So I think the Achilles heel for the market is actually lower rates or much, much lower rates.
So, Chris, I'm assuming that new target all the way up there at some level that I can't even contemplate. I'll be out of business if we're there anytime soon. No. It's predicated on like some earnings expectations for the underlying stocks in that index. Okay, so all those things that we just talked about: higher commodity prices, higher yields, higher dollar. You know, a consumer that seems to be kind of stretched a little bit here. You know, we can get into consumer credit and defaults and all that sort of stuff. At some point, doesn't this all have to be a bit of a headwind to corporate earnings when they have an inability to maybe pass through some of these costs? And this was one of the things that I think kind of spelled the markets a little bit back in 2022.
Yep. No, it's great, right? So what happened in 22, I think, is the market ran into a buzzsaw with the Fed. One of the reasons we struggled, right, we struggled with this 250 number on 2025. One of the reasons why we stayed too low for too long is we couldn't figure out the earnings power. And what we realized is what you're seeing in the market is what you're going to see on the earnings side. The winners will keep winning. You don't need a strong economy for large cap because you're going to get a market share shift. The winners, the higher profit, the higher growth companies are going to gain more of that market share. AI is not discretionary anymore, right? And so those companies will continue to gain. So you don't need the market to be, you don't need GDP to be 4 or 5%. You need, you can do it with GDP at 2%, 2.5%, because you're going to get these companies that are highly, highly profitable, a much bigger percentage, and we've already seen it, percent of the S&P 500. So if the winners keep winning, you don't need that growth, and that's what we're banking.
Chris, what about just productivity in other companies that aren't supplying the productivity but are using those productivity tools? How much do you factor that into your earnings?
Yeah, so we're not seeing the productivity from AI just yet. We expect to see it, but every single company is saying, we debated this. Is AI discretionary? Is it not discretionary? It's not discretionary anymore. And it doesn't matter if you're seeing the productivity gains today, you will see them tomorrow and tomorrow. You had Jamie Dimon talk about it as a steam engine and so on and so forth. It's not a question of if, it's just when and how we're going to do it.
Chris, always great to see you. Thank you.
Always great.
Chris Harvey. Julie, in small cap land, are we starting to see AI productivity gains? How are you thinking about how AI changes how companies operate, how productive they are, et cetera?
I think it's pretty mixed right now. Part of it, too, is thinking about how AI gets impacted by regulation and all of the reports of hallucinations and things like that. So I don't think companies are really willing to adopt broadly. But if you own a small cap software business, those coders, those engineers and those product managers, they're using a lot of AI to generate their code. And they're sometimes 10, sometimes 20, sometimes 40% more productive. And that enables them to be more profitable, come to market, IPO at better earnings multiples than they had been able to before.
55, 35, oh, you can't accept it. It's not, well, that doesn't sit well with you.
So here's the deal. So the last time the 10-year yield, and again, maybe Chris is totally right in that the pushback, you know, with the rates thing is that the last time that we had yields, you know, at, I don't know, man, when we broke out at 4,600 in the S&P 500, when the market was pricing in six cuts for this year, okay, the 10-year yield was at 4.15, you know what I mean? Right now we're at 4.35. If we have hot data and we go to 4.55 or something like that, I just think that there's a lot of multiple expansion that's going on there. And I just want to push back on one other thing. Is like to say that AI spending is not discretionary, I get that. But you cannot like discount the fact that enterprise spending is going to be a thing, you know, that is cyclical, right? And so if you do have issues, right, as far as earnings are concerned and margin compression and that sort of thing, and you've cut a lot of jobs already, then ultimately, if your sales go down, you will cut enterprise spending. You know what I mean? And so there will be some cyclicality to this, and we're not experiencing it right now because everybody has to be in there. If Jamie Dimon is putting out a 61-page opus comparing, you know, generative AI to the advent of fire and the wheel and everything else you want to throw in there at once, you look like a real you-know-what if you're not, like, spending and focused on this no matter what business that you're in. So, like, my point is at some point that recession that had been alchemied away over the last few years or so is going to hit, or the fear of it, and then you will see an enterprise, like a softening enterprise cycle.
What was that Tom Hanks movie that when he was a castaway?
I'm the captain now.
Castaway?
Is that what they called that movie? Oh, yeah. It's hot. I could be one of those people on some island. I'm just
talking
letting
to
you
a
know.
Talking to a volleyball.
And my rescue was dependent upon Siri. I'd be looking for coconuts and hanging out because there's no shot of me ever using that. I'm just saying. Zero.
Was that like a non sequitur?
No. Karen was talking about her use of Siri earlier.
That was like 7 minutes ago.
How do we save Guy? And she would say, today's Thursday.
Yeah, but I stayed with me. Next block, I would have forgotten.
Next block, you react to Chris Harvey. Coming up, more bruises for Boeing. Delivery stalling out. Now another whistleblower sounding the alarm on new safety concerns. All the details next. Plus, our call of the day on Cisco. Why analysts are saying this name is too good to pass up. And where they see that stock heading next. Don't go anywhere. Fast Money's back in two.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee. Right here on CNBC.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. Saving, researching, investing. Now you can take those investments to the next level with Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today. I have an investment account with Schwab and a 401k with Fidelity, and I use Yahoo Finance to consolidate them, so it's incredibly easy to manage. They've been helping great investors like you for over 25 years. So whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking to level up, Yahoo Finance can simplify things, putting all your tools and data in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a 360-degree look at the financial news cycle, from breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, and customizable charts. They've got you covered. You can see all of your 401k and other investments by securely linking your brokerage accounts. Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you see your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective helps smart investors become even better. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor. YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. That's YahooFinance.com.
We've got a news alert for the ratings for last night's men's college basketball championship and the major milestone we saw this year. Julia Borson's got the details. Hey, Julia.
Well, the ratings for the men's NCAA finals are out, averaging 14.8 million viewers across TBS, TNT, and True TV. That is up a hair from last year's 14.7 million viewers, which was the lowest on record. But these numbers were well below the ratings for the women's championship. That game between South Carolina and Iowa brought in 18.9 million viewers on ABC and ESPN on Sunday. That was up 90% from the viewers for the prior year's women's game. It was also the most viewed basketball game, pro or college, men's or women's, in 5 years. Now, it is worth noting that the women's final aired on ABC, so it was available to more viewers than the men's game, which was on cable, TBS, TNT, and True TV. While the men's final was a late Monday primetime slot, it ended after 11 p.m. Eastern, while the women's game was on a Sunday afternoon. So fascinating to see the division there, the gap between the men's and women's ratings.
Yep. Julia, thank you. Julia Borston. Meantime, Boeing shares down nearly 2% today after the New York Times reported the FAA is investigating new whistleblower claims, a Boeing engineer alleging that there are flaws in the fuselage of the 787 Dreamliner that could cause sections to weaken over time and break apart mid-flight. Boeing responded by calling those claims inaccurate, but Senator Richard Blumenthal told the Times that he is planning to hold a hearing with the whistleblower next week. Boeing also saying deliveries in the first quarter dropped to their lowest level since mid-2021. The stock is down close to 30% since that January mid-air door blowout. And when that happened, there are a lot of people who were quick to say this is going to be limited, this would be confined, the impact would be minimum, people would be able to look through this when it comes to the earnings of Boeing. And here we are, Karen, months and months later. What are you thinking about now?
We were just talking in the break about it. This sort of reminded me of the BP Deepwater Horizons, where it first started off as something else, and it sort of seemed to be small. There were some deaths, which is always terrible. And then the rig sank, and then, that left the pipe to just spurt into the ocean for I don't know how long it took them to contain this. Ultimately, though, the stock did recover. I just wouldn't be stepping in here, even though this is probably the time it looks terrible. You know, it's always darkest before the dawn, but I always think it's always darkest right after the time it was the darkest right before now. This right. just keeps getting darker and darker. But if you're a long-term thinker, then you got to think at some point it is Boeing. We always come back to the duopoly-ness of it, which right. is super important. So it's not for me, but I can understand why someone would want to take a shot here.
Yeah, I mean, it's darkest before it's pitch black, right? Mm. That's a little bit what the sensation feels like. You have to have a lot of confidence that they are going to be able to get through all of these problems. And for sure, there's demand, right? Their orders were better than expected, and I think that's great. But, right, this, like, orchestra of whistleblowers is pretty concerning if you're any kind of long-term shareholder, because if you continue to have these kinds of problems, you're going to be underwater as far as, you know, being able to pay out fines and regulatory problems. It's really hard to feel enthusiastic about it here.
I was one of those people in early March when it traded down to this level that thought, okay, double bottom here, here's your entry level. I looked like a genius when the CEO stepped down or announced that he was stepping down on the 28th. I think the stock traded up to 196. We're right back here. The price, I mean, clearly that's not great price action. I still like it. April 24th is the release. But now, if you've been on the sidelines, there's no compelling reason I mean, now you just wait and see what they say on earnings report on the 24th.
It's interesting that this whistleblower is talking about the Dreamliner. If you guys go all the way back, probably 12 years when this plane was rolling out, remember they had a lot of issues with their batteries and stuff like that? And that was one of the first quality assurance issues that, like, really happened. And then when we got into later part of that decade, we obviously had those plane crashes. That was the 737 MAX. So it seems like they have a horrible culture of quality assurance. After decades and decades, what was the saying about Boeing? Like, Boeing gets you there or whatever. It was like, you know, like people like, take it to the bank. That was like American made quality, that sort of thing. That is in question. When you think about the legacy of this management over these last few years, they cannot choose somebody internal to do this sort of thing. It has to be someone from external, and it's going to take a while to get that reputation back.
Yep. There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Cisco off the sidelines. One analyst says the stock is about to close the valuation gap. What they say will drive the networking name higher. Plus, inflation may be down, but power prices are up, up, up. How infrastructure upgrades are driving the surge and what it could mean for consumers. You're watching Fast Money live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click. Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Cisco soaring more than 3.6% today after Morgan Stanley resumed coverage on the networking giant with an overweight rating. It was the stock's best day since February of last year. Analysts saying the stock is trading near a record discount to the S&P and has the potential to deliver double-digit returns to shareholders. Their $58 price target implies a 20% premium to Monday's close. You were a little geeked up about this one.
Yeah, Dan. Very geeked up, Mel. No, I mean, I like situations like this where expectations are very low. Yeah. It's very, trading really cheap. We're seeing that the tech trade kind of broaden out a little bit. When you think about analyst upgrades, this is a reinitiation. There's only 7 analysts who rated a buy, 19 a hold, 1 a sell. So if they can just kind of get a few things going in the right direction, kind of, I don't know, talk about how they are going to be involved in this generative AI boon. Like, we just saw Dell join the party. We saw the memory guys join the party. There's no reason why, you know, switches and routers can't join the party, I'm sure. I don't know.
They were the backbone of the internet at one point.
Right?
I mean, this is a classic sort of lumpiness, right? During the pandemic, they couldn't build enough. They couldn't make enough because of the chip shortage. And then they had lots of chips and they built too much. The customers had a lot of stuff. They didn't need stuff anymore. Now things are evening out.
Not a huge growth story, but valuation is okay. And you can, I don't know if the crack staff back in EC can do this, but we're in this little bit of a pennant formation going back to, I think, June of 2022, the downtrend, and the uptrend probably early 23 or so. Looks like we're going to break out. So 58 is reasonable without question, and I'm looking at it. I mean, the real level to get to, I think, if you really want to get to brass tacks, is 62 or so, which was the high we saw a couple of years ago.
All right, coming up, CPI stabilizing. Your electric bill doesn't care. Why power bills may keep climbing even after the Fed gets inflation under control. We got the details next. Plus, small caps with potentially big gains, or one of our traders is seeing opportunity in tech land. And the small but mighty names he or she is picking out. More Fast Money in 2.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks closing little change as investors await tomorrow's CPI report. The Dow closing near the flat line at 6 negative session in 7. The S&P and NASDAQ both with small gains. The NASDAQ now on a 3-day winning streak. Some restaurant stocks getting burned today. Kava and Sweetgreen both with big drops as Starbucks also trades near its 52-week low. Meantime, CPI data, as we mentioned, out tomorrow. The cost of the utility component has risen between 2 to 2.5% for the first 2 months of the year, well above the overall index. So what is driving these gains? Can the Fed keep these prices in check? Let's ask Sophie Karp of KeyBank Capital Markets. Sophie, great to have you with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You make the point that the percentage that consumers actually spend on electricity is very small, it's 2 to 3%. But, you know, everybody uses electricity, obviously, and you open up the bill and you get that shock. So you actually have some pretty good news. You think that's going to normalize?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's very important to remember that there are two parts to your electricity bill, right? There's a part that pays for the grid, and it is part that pays for the energy you consume. And the part that pays for the grid is, it's moving up very slowly, right? It's growing at rates below inflation historically, and we expect it to continue to grow at rates below inflation. On the other hand, the energy component, that's a lot more volatile, and that's driven by the commodity market. Utilities don't control that, and usually everybody in the market is just a price taker, right? And so I think that we've seen a quite substantial power prices increases in 2022, 2023 on the back of higher commodity pricing. And that's still sort of working its way through the system. We still see some elevated levels of consumer bills from that. We do expect that to normalize and for the power prices to stabilize at these levels, which are very healthy right now. I think the generators are seeing pretty healthy margins, and to the extent we should see incremental demand, which is now currently projected from the AI and electrification, there should be a market response where more generation will be built to address that. So we don't actually expect to have some runaway electricity price inflation over the long term.
So in terms of the percentage of that bill that comes from the spend on the grid and the upgrades, how should we think about that component when we're reading about the need to bury power lines, the fireproof poles, et cetera, like all these things that just need to be done in order to bring this grid up to snuff for the new greener economy that will require so much more electricity?
Yeah, I think it's very highly dependent on the region where you're in, right? And obviously there are higher wildfire-prone regions like California, for example, or Colorado, where you might have higher need for that type of investment, and that will drive, rates slightly higher. But on average, I think that in the U.S., the rates are for the most of the country are pretty low as a percentage of annual income, right? So we've seen that most of the country is pretty green on this map, right? Even in the higher cost coastal areas. So the affordability is actually pretty decent. And we like to see affordability being high, because that allows utilities to make that necessary investment without putting undue pressure on utility bills. And as you have this potential load growth and growth in demand from AI or data centers or just electrification, that actually serves as an offset, because the rates are volumetric. So the more volumes of electricity is being sold into the grid, the more less pressure there is on rates. So we like seeing regions with decent growth, be that from industrial commercial customers or residential customers, such as for example, growing regions like Texas.
And I would imagine in terms of utilities that need to raise money, tap the debt markets, higher rates are not a good thing. So can you sort of overlay all of this? Which are the utilities that you like the best in this environment?
Yeah, I think we really like Xcel Energy. This is a utility that got penalized substantially by the market this year on the back of the wildfire in Texas that we all know about. I think that in our estimate, the total property damage from the wildfire will be quite manageable. We think that they will be able to stay under the insurance coverage, right? And so the multi-billion market cap erasure that occurred there, we think, is unwarranted. And otherwise, Xcel is an extremely well-run utility with high growth regions and high affordability in its service territories, which are Minnesota, Dakotas, Colorado, and Texas, right? If people are seeking exposure to the data center economy, people should pay attention to Dominion Energy, which is coming out of a major restructuring process and is covering Northern Virginia, which is a data center central in the U.S., as well as Constellation Energy, which is the largest nuclear operator in the U.S. and is well positioned to capitalize on the heightened volatility in the energy markets, as well as demand for baseload clean power.
Sophie, great to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sophie Karp of KeyBank. So that's interesting, the sort of the data center play within the utility sector.
So, and Dominion, I mean, if we could pull up a five-year chart, I mean, this thing has been, it's not cut in half, but it's probably down 40% from its prior all-time high. I think a lot of that is just sort of their nat gas exposure. It's sell first, ask questions later. But, if nat gas were just to stabilize, which it hasn't done for a while, this could be an interesting just sort of levered up play into earnings, I think, early May.
All right. Coming up, a small cap spotlight, Bentley Systems Engineering a late day rally today. One of our traders says this name might just have the foundation to build even bigger gains. Plus, a huge slate of bank earnings kicks off on Friday. JP Morgan, Citi, and Wells Fargo on the marquee. We will dive into what to expect from these results right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Small caps broadly lower over the past month, with the Russell 2000 lagging behind other major averages. But our resident small cap maven is here to highlight some small tech names worth watching. That maven, of course, is Julie Beal. Julie, which names are you looking at today?
There are a few software names that are starting to really benefit from the ability to use AI to make their businesses better. They tend to be vertical software names because they can more easily integrate their data sets that are really unique. So something like a Bentley, which does infrastructure software, and that's all they do, or an nCino, which is a lot of front office banking software. Again, all that they do, so they have a very proprietary data set that they can use AI to train on. Same thing with Certara. This is biosimulation software that is used for drug development. It can tell you how well is this drug going to be processed in the liver. And for them, they have a generative AI opportunity where they can actually start to suggest molecules for researchers to start to look at. So that's kind of a flavor of the businesses I think are interesting.
How are these valuations compared to their larger cap brethren in the same sorts of sectors?
You know, typically they have been lower because a lot of people feel there's more business risk, or they feel that they may have more sensitivity to earnings and what have you. But I still think that longer term, they actually have better growth opportunities in front of them. And so over the long term, these should be ones that are worth looking at.
It's interesting, you know, Bentley, and if I'm looking at this correctly, it trades like 50 times this year, 44 times next, multiple sales, double digit, like 12 times. So when I look at the expected growth in both of these, they're like 10, 15% over, you know, this year. They're expensive right now. And the stocks have kind of been, the stock in particular, has been kind of going sideways for months or so. What does it take for folks to kind of recognize that, say, that growth opportunity going forward? Because they're going to have to grow into these valuations and get further multiple expansion?
Yeah, well, the thing is that's positive is that if you look at businesses like this that are able to grow kind of low double digits, they still have a lot of margin opportunity. They had been investing up until this point, and so I think earnings can grow well beyond that. And most importantly, this is a business that's thoughtful about capital allocation. So instead of exploding, you know, share dilution, you're actually going to see some accretion. And I think that supports the earnings growth from here.
Coming up, focus on financials. As they gear up for earnings season, banks are feeling the pressure ahead of the first reports this week. The names to watch next. More Fast Money in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Banks kicking off earnings season this Friday with JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, and Citi set to report, Goldman, Bank of America, and more on the calendar for next week. But financials falling today ahead of the results, the sector posting the biggest losses in the S&P today. American Express, one of the biggest laggards after Barclays downgraded the stock to an equal weight, saying they see limited upside to valuation. Yeah, what do you think of this?
I think it makes sense.
Call,
I mean, it is expensive. It's had a huge run. If you're in an environment now where credit's going to be a concern, now's the time to do it. So it's better to be in front of these things. Now, that might be a couple weeks early, but I like this call.
Yeah. Does this tell you anything about how we should look at banks?
I'm excited for bank earnings. I think, you know, J.P. Morgan, of course, I read Jamie's letter. I've been talked about
every word.
Every word, right, twice. And it was just, you know, just things like the First Republic. How extraordinarily good that was.
Yeah.
They said $502 billion. I think all cylinders, right? We're getting capital markets business, and I think the economy is good, and there's spreads. There's a lot to like. Not expensive.
Julie?
Yeah, I'm curious, more talking about the M&A environment and if they're starting to see better deal activity, because I think we're all waiting to see if that's going to finally come to fruition. A lot of these PE companies have portfolios that are really long in the tooth and they need to trade them, and at some point they have to regardless of rates.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and we talked about this with Chris Verone a little bit last night, that the BKX, you know, the index that tracks the large banks, is trading 52-week highs, looks really constructive technically. Everything seems to be going fine despite the rate, or at least the idea of higher for longer. But the KRE, the regional banking, it's down like 10% from its regional highs and really is kind of stuck in the mud. So I think that, like, I'm really curious to hear, like, what the differential is between what they have to say about what they hold and what the rate environment holds for them.
Little quick caveat, price to earnings, Karen's spot on, but price to tangible book, as JP Morgan approaches 2.5, and it's pretty close right now, what I've noticed over the last decade or so, that's sort of the pinnacle of this thing. So we'll see what happens. And by the way, why doesn't he come on the show?
I know, he really should. The time that he has appeared on this show is when he called in for Karen's birthday.
Oh, yeah.
And that was like 15 years ago. 15 years ago or so. Right. I don't know. A long time
ago. She's blushing again.
It was a memorable moment. She's got it on loop at home.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
up next, final trade. Final trade time, and it is so nice to have Julie Beal on set. Julie. Mm-hmm.
Sertara, 90% of drugs approved use their software or their services.
Karen.
Yes, so Dell had a huge run up to mid-$130-something, $133 and change, pulled back $10. It's not just AI, PC, refresh. I like Dell.
Dan.
Yeah, we were talking about Cisco before. It's not just about switches and routers. It's also about Splunk guy. Mm. Yeah, they just closed that deal, $28 billion. You're going to hear a bit more of that this year.
Another birthday!
Another one!
Nancy delighted.
She's blushing.
She's blushing. Alcoa continues to go higher. Birthday girl!
Thank you for watching Fast
Money. She can't get us off fast enough. She's like, just like, go to Kramer.
That Kramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.